Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. I'm your host, Callie Fell. Today on Venus Rising, we welcome Gerda, a 27-year-old woman all the way from Poland who started to identify as trans at the tender age of 14. And she began the process of social transition at 19, followed by medical transition at 21. After 8 years of living as a trans man, she came to the conclusion that the majority of her gender dysphoria was a mixture of her psychological trauma and normal teenage angst. Detransition helped her change her life for the better, and she's here today to tell her story. Gerda, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, all the way from Poland. We had quite the trouble, at least I did, nailing down the proper time to have this interview. So I think it's evening time there and morning time here, and we made it work. So I appreciate it. If it's okay with you, we're going to go ahead and just start with your personal story. And we'll start from the beginning. What kind of child were you like? What was your life like before you became a teenager?
Yeah, so I think that, you know, the thing that mostly impacted me was the fact that my parents divorced. And, you know, at the beginning, my dad kind of tried to, you know, keep contact with us, but he eventually abandoned us, I would say, for good. And, you know, the what's really important here is that as a child, I didn't really understood that it was some kind of trauma that affected me. I mean, I kind of thought that it was just something that happened. And I thought that, you know, other kids had it worse because, for example, their parents were abusive, that they, you know, I don't know, have addiction problems. I thought that, you know, all that big stuff is the only thing that counts, like as trauma. So, you know, when I started to have a lot of negative emotions around my body or around my role in society as a woman, I never tried to analyze it through the lenses of my personal experiences, because I, as a child, I just didn't have this, you know, self-awareness. So, you know, there was also other things like childhood bullying. And I think that it is quite remarkable that every single detransitioner I have ever spoken to had some kind of this kind of experience. All of them were bullied. And I think that this is just something that just needs some research, because there is clearly some kind of link here. Yeah, and I just don't want to go too much into details with all, you know, that bad stuff that happened to me. And I just want to, you know, people to realize that sometimes it can trigger gender dysphoria, because I'm like 100% sure that it triggered mine, because once I started to work on these things, you know, I don't think that it's something, you know, I mean, gender dysphoria, it's not something that really impacts me in any way right now.
So, yeah, I think it's important that you bring up trauma and its effect on gender dysphoria. In our film documentary, our first film on this subject, Transmission, What's the Rush to Reassign Gender? We have a pediatrician talk about this, how there's all kinds of things. And it doesn't have to be, as you kind of alluded to, this big trauma or, you know, comparing trauma to trauma, but even a divorce, that's traumatic to a young kiddo and can have effects. Were you seeing anyone, like a therapist or anyone at this time, that you felt like you could talk about what you were going through?
And no, and this is not because, I don't know, my mother was negligent of me, but, you know, I was growing in Poland in 1990s and I don't think that anyone here just really thought even about the possibility that some hard experiences, you know, would require a special care if it's happening to children. And I don't even know if there was a child psychologist in my town when I was growing up. It just wasn't really a thing there.
Right. Yeah. And also affordable too, like in the United States,
yeah.
You know, just access to care. It, like you said, there might have not been one in your town, but it's an interesting point. So when you were 14, you decided that you were maybe experimenting with the idea that you were trans. Were you spending, so again, talking to other people, they spent a lot of time, they kind of found their tribe, right? They've been bullied at school in their communities. They find their tribe online, whether that's, you know, social media platforms or websites, and they kind of get, lack of a better word, sucked into this ideology. Did you find that that was your experience, or what was going on at 14 when you were like, aha, this is this? How did you find out that the idea of trans even existed, that you could try to be the opposite sex?
Yeah. So I was uncomfortable, you know, with female puberty even before I was 14, but I just didn't really, you know all these names like gender dysphoria or transsexual. So when I was 14 or 15, maybe, I was watching some kind of medical drama, and there was an episode with a girl, and she was very tomboyish. And she was, I think, first female character I have ever, you know, identified with when I was just watching some kind of dramas, because all the other girls were just way too girly for me. And she also seemed to have some kind of, she clearly felt disconnected from her sex. And during that episode, it appeared that she's in fact intersex, that she has an underdeveloped testicle that was causing some medical problems. And when she discovered that, she also, I think she was confronted with by some doctors with the idea of medical transition. And she decided to pursue this path. And at this time, I thought that you need to be intersex to be able to medically transition. And, you know, I started to talk with my mother about it, ask her a lot of questions, because it seemed very fascinating to me that you can actually, you know, medically change sex, or at least I thought so, because it was presented in that way. And, well, my mother obviously didn't know many answers to that, because it was a very specific topic. So I started to do some research on my own, and I realized that there are people who are not technically intersex, but they could be born with, you know, the brain of the opposite sex, because this was the dominant narrative back then. So, you know, they had this kind of intersex brain, let's just say, and those people are called transsexual, and they also can pursue medical transition. And when I started to read about it, I thought that, yeah, probably it's me, because, you know, this whole description suited me so perfectly. And what is funny, what I didn't realize, because I didn't have many close female friends, at least at this time, I think I had none, actually. So I didn't know that many girls actually shared the same angst with me. Like, it didn't happen until I started my medical transition. I went to college and I met some, girls, and started to talk, and they were very curious about my experience as a transsexual person. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when I was started to describe them what gender dysphoria is, they were like, oh yeah, I had it too when I was growing up. And I was like, what? No. You know, it was supposed to be a very unique experience that requires a special medical care. So it was, you know, kind of weird to me that a very normal girl, so to say, also struggled a lot with their changing body. Yeah. So I know that, you know, that kind of being groomed online is a common theme among other detransitioners. I'm not sure if that had so much impact on me, because I wasn't an active member of trans community when I started to, you know, explore my identity. I joined trans support group, and I was here for a couple of years, but honestly, I just found these people very annoying and unhinged. And I decided to leave. So I never had like close trans friends or whatever. So okay. I can't really say that I was, you know, brainwashed into being a cult. I definitely was affected by all these articles, how they, you know, presented what, how transition look like. And from perspective of time, I must say that, you know, all this media that I was consuming was not really sincere. You know, they portrayed the realities of medical transition in a very honest matter. And in this fact, maybe from this point of view, I could say that I was groomed in some way, because, you know, I was a very young person without, you know, this developed critical skills, was greatly affected by all this media. But there wasn't like specific person who was actively grooming specifically me. So yeah.
Sure. Do you think that, I'm going to fast forward just a little bit in your story. Do you think that because you didn't have that intense like group that you were associated with, do you think that that made it easier in your decision to later detransition?
Yeah, definitely. And I never was like this kind of woke trans person who claimed, you know, trans women are women, trans men are men. I was pretty much aware of my biological reality, that you cannot change biological sex. At least this is what kind of, you know, mind view that I had when I was like 24, 23. Mm-hmm. Because when I was a teenager, I pretty much believed that there was like no visual difference between trans men or men. But I kind of grew out of this. So because I was already pretty much detached from, you know, this mainstream trans ideology, it was also easier to come to believe that maybe transition wasn't really, you know, best way of dealing with my problems. And I don't know if it will be possible if I had this close ties with trans community, because even, you know, when you express your doubts about your transition, there usually are your trans friends who will try to assure you that this is normal to have doubts, that this is because of, you know, transphobia and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, every time you just have this second thoughts about it, you just kind of get, you know, shut sure. up. Yeah.
Okay, so let's go back. I have more questions about your future in a minute, but let's, so talk to us about the steps that you took from the time that you found out that you thought you could change sex, or that that's what's happening in your life. Talk to us about the steps that you took to kind of start socially transitioning, and then the steps you took to medically transition, and maybe start with defining the difference between the two. Maybe what is social transition versus what is medical transition?
Yeah, so social transition is usually defined as, you know, just changing your name and your sex pronouns, you know, usually changing your wardrobe, you know, to the more suiting, you know, your desired sex. Mm-hmm. You know, a medical transition is usually understood as taking hormones of the opposite sex and any surgical interventions. But to be honest, sometimes it's kind of blurred, because, for example, wearing binders, while it's usually understood as a part of social transition, could lead to very serious medical problems. And sometimes they are very permanent. So usually when people say, you know, that a social transition is safe from the medical point of view, well, not necessarily, because as I said, sometimes some part of steps you are taking could lead to, you know, damaging your health. So when it comes to me, as I said, I was 14 when I started to identify as trans, but to be honest, I didn't really have much room to do anything about it, because it was illegal in Poland to start medical transition for minors. You had to be at least 18 years old. Okay. And To be honest, I couldn't really imagine a scenario when I was just, you know, coming out as trans and trying to live as a man without, you know, any medical intervention, because ultimately I would just still look like a teenage girl I was. So I just didn't really see the point. I just thought that it could, you know, damage my life even further without any benefits to that. So I just started to explore this idea more, just try to learn how it really looks like, just try to learn how the process of legal sex looks like, the legal sex change looks like, because in Poland it's quite complicated, to be honest. So when I was 19, I actually had some kind of, you know, spare money to start, process of diagnosis. So this is when I came out initially to just my mom and my closest friends. So it was kind of a weird stage for me, because for some people I was, I was a he, for some people I was still a she. And it was kind of confusing, to be honest. But when I started medical transition at 21, my diagnosis lasted for almost 3 years.
You're what? I'm sorry, say that again.
My diagnosis. Because
diagnosis?
Yes. Okay. In Poland, you need to be diagnosed with transsexualism or gender identity disorder. I'm not sure which is right now correct term. Okay. So for me, it lasted, the diagnosis lasted for 3 years. But to be honest, not because my doctor was so cautious, but rather because I struggled financially. So, you know, I just couldn't afford to get all that, you know, medical tests and that was required for the diagnosis. So it just took me, you know, ages to get there. Mm-hmm. So at 21, I started to take testosterone and then I went to college. And when it comes to, you know, medical steps, that aside from wearing a binder, I just didn't really do much, anything more. As I said, mostly because I was just too poor to afford it. And that was a good thing, I guess. Sometimes it's good to be poor. But I think that when I was 25, so after 4 years of taking testosterone, I decided to stop it, but mostly for financial reasons. And that was actually kind of funny, because I had like plenty of other reasons to stop taking testosterone. For example, my blood tests were not really ideal. My blood pressure started to rise pretty quickly, but it wasn't really that much of concern for me, because, you know, I was absolutely sure that I just, you know, need medical transition to survive. So I pretty much had in mind this idea that once, you know, my financial situation would get more stable, I will come back to testosterone, but it just never happened.
Okay, I have two questions. Tell me more about the effects of being on testosterone, what that did to your body. And then two, what would you say to someone then that would say, oh, well, you just stopped because you didn't have the money to stop. You're not a detransitioner. It's not like you finally woke up. It's just because you couldn't afford it. Can you go a little deeper into that thought?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think that person who claimed that would be correct at the, you know, very beginning of my, you know, medical transition, because I was, if I could afford taking testosterone, I would just go for it. But there was a just moment in my, I think that detransition is more a mental process really than a physical one, because there are some people who, you know, not longer identify as trans, but for many reasons couldn't really, you know, stop their medical routine. For example, some men who went through, you know, genital sex surgery, reconstruction surgery. I'm not sure what's the English term, but I'm pretty sure you know what I'm talking about. After that, they don't really want to start taking testosterone, mostly because it could just lead to very unpleasant effects. For example, their libido goes back, but they don't really have a penis. So, you know, it's, I can imagine it is very frustrating and can have a very damaging psychological effect. So So I wouldn't call them, you know, fake detransitioners because of that, because they have, I would say, a medical reason to, you know, stay on estrogen.
They're kind of like trapped. They're like trapped to the medical system.
Yeah, to be honest. Yeah, that's trapped. Yeah. Exactly. So there was a moment when I was, you know, off testosterone, but I was still a trans person. And there was a moment when I was off trans testosterone and I was a detransitioner. So, yeah.
Tell us about that switch then. That, what was it that made you go from, even though you're off testosterone, you would still consider yourself a trans man. When were you like, wait, no, I don't identify as a man. I am a woman.
Yeah. So that was quite a funny story because I firstly joined Twitter as a trans person because I was very, I didn't really like the direction that where the trans movement started to go. Like, you know, all that biological males in women's sport or in women's prisons, things like that, or, you know, medical interventions on minors, it all just seemed very wrong to me. So I just wanted to join, you know, the discourse as a trans person, mostly because I just wanted to show that it's not really a hate speech to oppose to all that things, because, you know, I was trans, I didn't hate myself for being trans, but I just still from, you know, from logical and moral point of view, no, it was just wrong and just unjustified. But when I started to talk about these things with people, I started to, you know, meet the transitioners. I started to meet people who just had very strict views of transgenderism in general, because, you know, there were people who were like, yeah, there are actual trans people and it's fine for them to transition and it's fine for them to, you know, to respect them. But it's not okay, for example, to transition minors. But there were people who were just like, no, there is no such thing as trans people. Like, this is all bullshit. So, you know, and I engaged with many discussions, and the more I started to think about it, the more I realized how little sense this really, you know, makes. Because I still believed in that intersex brain theory, because, you know, there were some studies that proved that. But there was an article written by Sami Stagg, I think, on Twitter, that explained that, you know, that these studies are not really reliable in that sense, that they didn't really consider the sexuality of people. So, you know, researchers thought that those studies found brain differences between, you know, women and women who identify as trans. But in fact, those studies found a difference between homosexual and straight women. So, you know, when I read about it, I was like, damn. So, you know, if it's not neurological, because I was pretty sure it's just, you know, coming from brain, but if it's not really coming from your brain structure, then it must be psychological. And the more I started to think about it, the more I realized that I don't really benefit in any way from, you know, medical transition, because I was pretty much, you know, miserable before and after transition, and things that, you know, made me feel a little bit better are very universal things that just, you know, every single person needs in the world. Like, I, you know, when I found friends, when I started to engage in some hobbies, when I started to actually, you know, grow and develop as a person, and, you know, those were the things that made me feel better and not transition. So when I realized that I don't actually need it, I also realized that if I go back to testosterone, I would just, you know, damage my health even further, and that I would be always stuck in this kind of lie, because it really takes a lot of effort to convince everyone that you are actually a man when you are a woman. And it also brings a lot of anxiety in your life, because, you know, just thinking, they really, you know, perceive me as a man, or they're just being polite, or they're thinking about me behind my back. And yeah, of course, I could also have this kind of thoughts, you know, after the transition. But to be honest, I just don't really have any need to convince anyone that I am a woman, because I know that I am a woman. So even if somebody thinks that I'm not really a woman, I'm less of a woman because of how I, you know, look or sound, I mean, that's not my problem, because I know I'm not lying to anyone. So, yeah.
Wow. Everything you said there, I mean, I just felt like tears kind of welling up, because what you said about just how we all need the humanness, right? To live a lot, you know, having friends, having hobbies. Richie talked about, or Tulip talked about, just being outside and enjoying nature. And just how we kind of forget the importance of those things in our lives and in our mental health. And so, So thank you for sharing all of that. I want to go back a little bit and talk briefly about what testosterone, how it made you feel, what side effects, if any, that you had when you were on it. Do you mind talking about that?
Yeah. So basically, when people talk about medical transition, they usually just focus on the masculinization effect, because, well, this is something that they want to achieve. So, you know, on every trans website, you can read that testosterone causes, you know, hair growth, you know, on your body, not necessarily on your head. It's actually quite opposite. Or it can cause your voice to drop. Well, there's also a fat redistribution, both on your face and your body. So it's kind of masculinizing your body and face a little bit. Well, there are also less desired things like changing your body odor, or
body odor. Some people, is that what you said?
Body odor. Yeah. And there is also some things like, you know, your skin starts to produce more oil and things like that. But there are also psychological effects, which are not really discussed, I think. I mean, some trans rights activists will claim that there are no really psychological effects of taking testosterone, that there could be some, but they are just more coming from, you know, the relief of, you know, helping with your gender dysphoria. So when you just, you know, lower your dysphoria, you just become more confident and so on, so on. So they just kind of try to show that that this is just a positive change of your life that's causing, you know, all that, you know, mental things. But to be honest, I really highly doubt it, because a lot of detransitioners speak about the same patterns of changes, like some had grown anger issues to the point that they just couldn't really control themselves. I think Helena had the most visible story about it, because it was just very extreme what she had gone through.
She's in our new film that I was talking to you before we started recording, The Detransition Diaries, that's coming out September 19th, or has come out September 19th. And it's so disheartening, and it was scary to hear her story and what she went through and the anger and the rage that she experienced on testosterone. But sorry, I cut you off, so please continue.
No, that's fine. Yeah, but also a lot of detransitioners speak about just having your emotions completely flattened. And to be honest, this is not something that I really realized in time, because for some people, it just happened like in the span of a month or two. So it was very visible. But for me, it was more like slowly boiling a frog. Like it just becomes so, you know, there was just a moment when I was, you know, a 20-year-old person who could get excited very easily and had a lot of passions. And there was suddenly, 25 years old me, which is, you know, was constantly tired and just emotionally numb. And I didn't realize it was testosterone causing it, because it just happened so, you know, gradually. And there was also, many things just happening in my life. So I was just more focusing on some kind of psychological explanation for why it was that way. So I was just like, yeah, I'm just depressed, I'm just anxious, and, you know, this is all happening because of that. And, also stopping testosterone didn't really, put me back to where I was before I started taking it. It was also a very slow progress. And to be honest, there was a time when I thought that, like, maybe I'm just, my brain is just damaged, and it won't actually go back. But luckily, I think that that's not really true, because I think it was a couple of days ago when I just, watching some art, and there was a figure, a statue, I don't really remember its name, but it was just so beautifully sculpted. Like, it just looked like a real flesh. And when I was looking at that, I just, that this pure beautifulness of this thing, it was just so, I didn't experience, the kind of feeling for such a long time. Mm-hmm. So it was a very precious moment for me, because I also realized that, I can actually appreciate those things again. So yeah. There's also another aspect of medical transition that trans community don't really talk about it, at least anymore, which is medical side effects. There's a site about medical transition in Poland, and it's the biggest one at this moment. And it says that transition is completely safe, that, side effects are relatively rare. And even if they happen, they're usually not that serious. They can, get them in control by, for example, exercising or eating healthy. And because of that, I didn't really know that many things that were happening to me were caused by medical transition. But when you talk to other detransitioners, you realize that, again, all of them have very similar problems, like digestive problems, breathing problems that were not only caused by wearing a binder, because this mm-hmm. is a like pretty much obvious that wearing a binder could lead to this kind of problems. But what was really eye-opening for me is learning that many detransitioners have asthma-like disease, not necessarily asthma, but something very similar. And that was not caused by binders, but by testosterone alone. And it was quite shocking for me, because I also have this kind of problems, and I would have never linked them to medical transition, because you cannot even find this kind of information on the internet or during your doctor's appointment. Like, nobody could tell this to you that it could happen. And a lot of my health problems actually started to, get better once I stopped taking testosterone. Mm. So, that's kind of funny, but as a trans person, you cannot really know, what portions of your problems are caused by medical transition until you, make a pause and observe what's happening to your body. Mm.
That's a good point to go back to. When you wanted to go on to testosterone in the United States, it's very different, I'm sure, than in Poland. Oh, maybe not. I don't know. That's my question. How easy is it to get testosterone? What was the process like? What doctors did you have to see? And did you feel like you were adequate, like you knew what you were getting into? Or was there a risks and benefits paper that you saw? Or what was your consent process like? Tell us about that in Poland.
Yeah, so Poland is quite well known for a very strict gatekeeping. And not so long ago, when I was 14, I was just, reading trans forums in Poland and so on. I wasn't really actively participating, but I was reading a lot. and people were warning each other of what things you can say at your doctor's appointment, what things you should just avoid. For example, it was like a common knowledge that if you are not homosexual, you shouldn't mention that, because especially if you are a man, because when you are a straight man and you will go to the doctor and say that you want to be a woman, you're just gonna be, you know, diagnosed as a man with a fetish, genophilia. So it is just better to say that you are homosexual, that you want to, you know, have a perfect, normal, straight family as a woman. And, you know, this should really not. And also, there was a huge, people were also saying that it's better to present as gender conforming as possible. So, you know, if you are a woman, you identify as a man, you cannot just, you know, let your hair grow, because it also will bring a lot of suspicion. So you just had to mimic, you know, the opposite sex as stereotypically as you only can get. So that was, you know, the kind of mindset that most of doctors had when I was firstly reading about transition. But to be honest, I cannot really say that it was hard to access medical transition, because if you actually had finances, you could access it very easily, because there were doctors and they were very well known in the trans communities that could prescribe you hormones on a first appointment, before you even, you know, present your blood test to the doctor. And this is like a medical necessary, but those doctors usually were very expensive. And I mean, very expensive. Like I know one took like one of a third of a typical income from one of my, you know, trans friends, let's just say. So that was just an insane amount of money for one medical appointment. And there are also some doctors who I would say that they just belong in jail, because I know there is a very very well-known doctor in Poland who also prescribes hormones on a first appointment, but he also demands only from his trans patients to allow him to take a naked picture of his patients. And this is also very well known in a trans communities. I mean, when I first learned about it, I was very shocked that people allowed it, that nobody really, you know, tried to sue him. But actually people in Poland, you know, on these trans forums were more like, oh, it's just a, you know, one picture, and it's not really a big, you know, but this is something that we could pay to just get an easy access to transition. Wow. And yeah, to be honest, people were quite protective of him, because for many, it was like their last resort to get easy access to hormones.
Yeah. So if you don't have the money to pay for it, then you can just sell your body via picture,
basically. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Wow. So, yeah, and there were also many of immoral doctors that, you know, made really hideous crimes, I would even say. But I don't think that any of them were even met with consequences of their actions. Yeah, and as I said, yeah, the trans patients are just completely silent about the things that were happening to them during these appointments. And I think this is actually quite telling, that there is a group of patients that could be like horribly abused and none of them would do anything about it. And I think it's quite telling that this group of patients is not mentally okay, because I think any well-functioning person wouldn't really agree on these terms. And well, for some reason, trans patients are just acting in a very different way.
Wow. That's really, really, like, I just got like a pit in my stomach when you were saying that. And it makes me really nervous for the United States, especially, or anywhere that's allowing this to happen to children, to minors, because I just think about, well, I just think about also John Money and how, what he did to the young boys that he treated. I say that with like quotes around it. So are you grateful that Poland has more strict gatekeeping for young kids then? Or like, what's your...
I don't really think it's doing much right now, especially that right now, I don't think it's that strict anymore, because I've heard of children as young as 13 who had their breasts removed. But I'm not sure if it's happening exactly in Poland. I think that many of these parents are just, you know, traveling with their children outside Poland.
So they're going outside the borders.
Yeah, but it's still allowed by law in this matter that, you know, nobody really tries to protect their children, and nobody really reacts when, you know, their parents decide to cut their healthy body off. And I know that there are more and more doctors who are willing to help minors. And when I was starting my medical transition, it was really impossible to start hormonal treatment before you'll be 18. Mm-hmm. Like the best you could do is just to start your diagnosis area, so you can just, you know, start taking hormones, you know, at your 18th birthday. Mm-hmm. But right now, I think that there are children as young as 15, 14 who are already on hormones. So I think that Poland is not really that strict when it comes to safeguarding.
Gotcha. Wow, that's a lot to process.
Yeah, but you also asked about the steps that I need to take to start medical transition in Poland. Yeah, I'm not sure how it looks right now because a lot of has changed. But when I was starting my medical transition, we didn't really have any gender clinics in Poland. There were just, you know, single doctors. All of them had their, you know, private offices.
Okay.
And while there was some guidance on how to proceed with trans patients, to be honest, all of them had their own practices. As I said, there were people who prescribed you testosterone on the first visit. There were people who would just keep you waiting like 5 years for that because, you know, they just wanted to be absolutely sure that the patients know what was going to happen to them. But the most common route, I would say, for many trans people in Poland is that they go to the doctor who has a diploma in sexology. And there are usually gynecologists or endocrinologists. So, you know, they can actually also prescribe you hormones if they decided that you are trans. But usually before you are prescribed with hormones, you need to go for some kind of psychological evaluation. And some doctors require to have, you know, a note both from a psychologist and a psychiatrist that's saying that you are mentally well, that you are aware of what transition is going to happen to make to you. But to be honest, I don't really think that it's really doing that much difference that you need to be psychologically evaluated. Because as I said, trans people on these forums were explaining each other how to act during these appointments, what to say, what not to say. Mm-hmm. So they are very well trained, and it happens very rarely that somebody doesn't really know past this stage. And to be honest, when I started my medical transition, medical diagnosis, let's just say, I was pretty much aware that sometimes some other health issues could cause, you know, gender dysphoria. So I thought that I'm going to, you know, play it smart. I'm going to be honest. I'm not going to lie to my doctor or anyone. I just want to be diagnosed and, you know, just get the best treatment for me, whatever it will be. Mm-hmm. So when I had my appointment at psychologist, I was very open about many of my experiences. For example, I talked about, you know, my father, how he abandoned us, blah, blah, blah. I talked about, and I think this shows how corrupted this whole industry is, because I talked to my psychologist about a psychotic episode, I think, that I suffered through when I was, 19. At least I think it was that, because it didn't really, you know, happen again, so I'm not quite sure. But there was like a week, I think, when I just had like terrible nightmares every night, and every day I just would wake up with sleep paralysis, and I had, you know, visual hallucinations and auditory hallucinations. And yeah, it was very terrifying experience. And of course, I was quite critical of all these things. I knew it's not real, but it was still very scary, nevertheless. So when I talked with my psychologist about it, she seemed concerned, but she came to the conclusion that because I was, you know, skeptical about these hallucinations, I knew it was hallucinations, then I'm not probably schizophrenic. And she came to the conclusion that it was just, you know, a stress caused by stress, caused by prolonged gender dysphoria. So yeah, to be honest, there are just, you know, health professionals who will just interpret everything you say to just match this, you know, trans narrative. I think that, you know, despite that there was a lot of red flags in my story, a lot of, you know, personal trauma, a lot of family issues, I think my psychologist only once expressed some kind of doubt that maybe I'm not really a trans person, and it was because a lot of woman in my family had quite a sad and hard life, really. And she was like, oh, maybe this is why you don't want to be a woman, because you just associate being a woman with being unhappy. And I told her, yeah, but on the other side, for example, a lot of men from my father's side of family committed suicide. They also had some, you know, kind of mental health issues. And she was like, oh yeah, so it's fine. And she kind of, you know, abandoned this topic because, well, if also men in my family were not happy, then it's all fine. So, she, you know, despite that, I think I had 10 visits with her. So it was quite a long time to really, you know, explore my issues. I don't really think that she had an intention to dwell, you know, deeper into it. I think that the problem is that she also liked the extent that she like actually liked me. And I think that she really wanted to help me. And I think she really believed that transition would make me happy. Mm-hmm. So she kind of tried to make me happy by, you know, diagnosing me with transsexualism. So it's not really, I don't really think that she was a bad person.
Yeah. I think that, and I talked to someone else about this, that, you know, I think some providers, right? Some therapists, some doctors, they're not trying to harm people. That's not their motive. They really do have genuine, they want to help kids and they want to help adults. But in your experience, it seems like had you really been able to explore your trauma and the other symptoms or things that you were having at that time, you might have come up with, if you hadn't already decided in your mind that you were trans or that that's what you wanted to go into the appointment with as that, as your motive, you might have found something else, or you might have healed through something else rather than being medicalized. Sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. And the problem is that you know, once my psychologist signed out that paper that, yeah, she diagnoses me with transsexualism, and she actually wrote in my diagnosis things that just seem quite funny to me right now from the perspective of time. I remember there was a sentence saying that referring to me with female pronouns causes me physical pain. Something like that. And so, yeah, it was a very dramatic, to be honest. Yeah. And I think that also the thing that convinced her that I can't really, you know, fake being trans or whatever, is the intelligence test that I had to take. Because it is a part of requirement to, you know, in Poland, to get your legal sex changed. Like, your doctor can prescribe your hormones without it, but you need to prove that you are not actually, you know, just that you're not just disabled in any way. So you just need to prove that, you know, you can make really a conscious decision.
Sure.
So I had to take this intelligence test, and it actually appeared quite high. It wasn't a standard IQ test, because it was just giving you a score from 0 to 10, and I was a 9. I don't really know how to interpret it, but my psychologist was very enthusiastic about it, and she was like, oh, you had this highest score from all my patients ever. And I think that because she you know, she thought so highly about me, because, oh, so intelligent, like, she just couldn't really take the possibility that I could be wrong about myself, that I could, that I actually can, you know, have just some stupid thoughts in my head. Because, well, I was a teenager, so of course I had a lot of stupid ideas. I think it's just, you know.
Don't we all at that age?
Yeah.
Which I think you bring up a good point. You know, you don't think that she had any malintent. Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. But I think that's why this conversation, why us talking and having other people hear your story is so important. Because I think, yes, there are doctors and there are people who have malintent in this business. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's sickening and it makes me sick. But I think that there are people who really do want to help other people. And we need to have this conversation about what this does to people so that we can open the eyes and we can actually take care of people. So I want to ask just a couple more questions. So what advice would you give a listener today that's curious about transitioning or maybe is struggling with their identity? And then what would you say maybe to a person who's like you, has transitioned and is now on Twitter, open, or any other social platform, open to listening to other voices and wants to know maybe what this detransition life is all about? Maybe they're questioning what they've been through. What would you say to those folks?
Yeah, so it comes to, you know, people who are just exploring their identity, who are just thinking about medical transition. I would just say that firstly, they need to take their time, because none of these changes are actually reversible. I mean, I know there are some people who, you know, are telling you if you will eat your kids, you can always, you know, get new ones back, but there will not be your natural body. They will not have your natural body functions. So any step you will take will bring you more disconnected from your biological sex. So it's not really working that way, that you can start medical transition in 3 or 4 months, you can start thinking, oh, maybe I'm just really a woman, and go back. Because probably the changes that you will experience will keep you away from going back. And this is actually a very common theme that many trans women that I have spoken to claim, that they consider retransition not because they are struggling with gender dysphoria, not because they actually like being trans, because all of them say it was a huge mistake, but they feel that they are so far gone in transition that they will never be able to live a successful life as women. And to be honest, I can kind of relate to that because there was one experience that made me very anxious. I just started the new job a couple of months ago. And when I was just, you know, introducing myself to a bunch of people, there was one guy who just, you know, tried to grab my hand and say hello. But when he heard that I introduced myself with a female name, he just like kind of stopped. And from a friendly approach, he changed to a very, I cannot say hostile, but it was very clear that he had some disgust toward me. And he just kind of avoided me for the next day. And I don't know if I had ever spoke to him again. I just think he just kind of avoids me. Yeah, but whatever. I just mean that, well, society is quite harsh to women who are not really, feminine. Or
they don't fit the stereotypical gender role.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And well, there's also the other aspects that I think that a lot of people who meet me actually think that I can be biologically male who tries to, you know, pass as a woman or something. I know that some people were suggesting something like that. So yes, there's a lot of confusion around me. And while I think I handle a lot of this quite well, I can imagine that for someone who just, you know, had more drastic changes in their body, there are some people who barely pass as female after, for example, 10 or 15 years of taking testosterone. It can be a very hard decision. And well, of course, after 1 or 2 months, you probably won't look like, you know, a stereotypical man, but still, it could be very surprising how fast some changes could be happening. I remember that there was one story on a D-Trans forum written by a very young girl. I think she was underage, like 16 maybe. And she was on testosterone for less than 3 months, but she was absolutely devastated by the effect of her voice. Like her voice dropped out very quickly. Mm. And she, well, I don't know how she really sounds like, but in her ears, she doesn't really sound like a woman anymore. And she expressed a lot of disgust and hate towards her voice. So yeah, that's the thing that people who are considering transition needs to be aware of, that you cannot really, you know, cherry pick the changes that you want to take. Mm-hmm. And that you cannot really control the pace of those changes. So some changes could happen before you are ready for them. And I would also recommend being very honest about your experiences and really try to, you know, to discuss internally all the things that happened to you, like your trauma and your reasons to have gender dysphoria, because there are no such things as, you know, innate gender dysphoria. There is always a cause. And I can understand that for some people, it can be very hard to address this cause. And they can still think that medical transition is just better than dealing with those emotions forever. But you need to be aware of what this causes, because if you are not, you can eventually, you know, fix these things that were causing these emotions to you, and you will wake up in a body that's not really longer suitable to, you know, the kind of life that you would like to have. And my final advice, I think that, oh, this is just hard to explain, because there's a lot of things that I would like to say, and I don't think we have time to, you know, just go for a monologue for an hour.
I wish we did. And you know, Gerda, we can have you back on the show. I feel like sometimes we really get the tip of the iceberg. We get to know a guest and then time is up, or, you know, we need to go on because we have other things in our lives. But we can certainly have you back. And I'd love to do that if you'd be willing. And we can talk more about how you would, you know, address this community. But feel free to continue with what you were saying. But I'm just throwing that out there as an option as well, that this doesn't have to be the final conversation we have.
But I would also recommend, of course, reading a lot of the transitional stories, because you could be surprised by how many common themes you would find. Because when I was still identifying as trans, and I firstly discovered, you know, that some people actually did transition, I think I was kind of buying this whole narrative that those people just weren't really trans, that they probably did transitioned because they didn't like all these changes that were, you know, happening to their bodies. Mm-hmm. It was not necessarily true. And because, for example, I was very enthusiastic about this whole masculinization effect. I mean, I wasn't bothered by it by the slightest, quite contrary. So in this term, there was like no really, no difference between me and any trans person who would be probably happy with the transition for the rest of their lives. So I would really recommend, just to any people who consider transition, just reading about the story and reading them with really open mind, without, you know, all this defensiveness. Because I remember I was just, I was once talking on Twitter with a young trans-identified woman. And she was kind of telling me about her personal story, how she discovered that she has gender dysphoria and so on, and also about her family background. And to be honest, for me, our stories sounded very, I would say it was almost the same. I mean, she had troubles with her father. She just had this kind of feeling that something was off with her, with her body and so on, but she didn't really realize it was gender dysphoria before she, you know, she knew that term. And it was really astonishing for me. Like, she was just like me too old. When I tried to confront her with my story, she said that, oh, our experiences are very different, but, and I was like, really different? Like, I just, everything you said so far, just, I can find it in my personal story.
Yeah.
So it was very, it was just very obvious for me that she just was super defensive when she was reading my story, and she was just trying to find anything that would just make us very different, while I don't think we were so different. When it comes to things that I could advise to the transitioners, I think that the most important thing right now is that when you come to realization that transition was a mistake, you will probably feel a lot of anger, a lot of betrayal, because you will feel that you were failed by people who are supposed to help you. And sometimes these feelings may push you to doing things that you may later regret, because and I think this is a very common theme in all the transitional stories, that when they are so angry and betrayed, they just feel like they just go into their berserk mode, and they just want to fight. And they just, this is the moment when they are willing to go completely public with their stories, when they are willing to share their most personal things about themselves, because they just feel that what happened to them is so evil, and they just want to get some justice and also protect other people from the same fate. And, I don't think it's the best approach at the very beginning of your detransition, because eventually you will start to focus more on your life, more on healing from all this trauma. And being a public figure may not really be the best way of, you know, processing these whole things. I mean, there are some people who are just born activists, like they, and for example, I'm pretty sure that I'm not one of them. And right now I'm not really that active on Twitter. I'm just really focusing on my life. I really enjoy, you know, talking and podcasts and interviews, but I'm not really that, you know, warrior type of detransitioner, sure. Though I was at the very beginning, you know, of my process. I just went through all that stages that I described. So I would recommend just taking your time and just try to process your feelings first, because you can accidentally just make harder for yourself to just, you know, go on with your life. Especially that, you know, when somebody is a public figure, it's very hard to eventually make some major changes in your life. For example, I think everybody who's slightly interested in the topic of detransition knows who Shapeshifter is. And Shapeshifter has some troubles with going back on testosterone because he keeps getting, you know, allergy from that. And I don't know if he already found a way of solving it, because a lot of people just gave him a lot of advices. How could he, you know, apply testosterone in a way that wouldn't harm him? But I can imagine a scenario with a detransitioner who just, you know, tries to go back to their original sex hormones and just can't go with it because of some medical issues. Sorry. And I also can imagine a scenario when, you know, this detransitioner decides to go back to, you know, the opposite sex hormones because he doesn't really have any alternative. And there will be a lot of people who will try to use it against him and against, you know, the agenda he's trying to push. Sure. Especially, for example, you can just look at Tulip, who is just like constantly attacked because he's still taking estrogen, despite that he has a medical explanation why he's decided to take this path. And there's a lot of people who just accuse him that he's like still technically trans, that he's still experiencing gender dysphoria. So he just, you know, so this is just, you cannot really avoid it while being a public person. So I would only recommend going public with your story to people who are just completely sure that they want to dedicate a huge portion of their lives to it.
Well, I'm grateful that you have decided to come on Venus Rising and share your story. And I can see how, I mean, people who don't go through transition and then detransition, we don't share our mental struggles or our physical struggles on social media platforms, you know. We don't detail our medical history. And so this is something that's a big step to go public and share such a personal story about your medical and personal history. So I can see where it takes a toll on people, and to really consider the fallout, I guess, or what the ramifications of sharing such a personal story publicly. But I am very appreciative that you came on our show and told your story, and so eloquently. I really appreciate it, Gerda.
Yeah, I really appreciate that you gave me a platform to speak.
So I'm going to wrap up the show here. I think we should have you back on and we can talk more in depth about some of these things that we covered. I have so many more questions for you, as I'm sure our listeners do too. But it has been a privilege and an honor to have you on the show. I wish you well. And I thank you again so much for taking time out of your day to chat with me and share such a personal story.
Thank you. Yeah, I would gladly meet you again. So.
Great. I'd also like to thank each and every listener and subscriber for tuning in. Our goal, as ever, is to create conversations, facilitate discussions, and encourage you all to think beyond the masses. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes, too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.